Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. This week I'm in Ioannina in northern central Greece, and I'm with three Czech colleagues, Max, Rodomir and Aleš, and we're going to learn all about building, rowing or paddling, sailing a Neolithic log boat replica. I'm very excited.
Oh, just so you know, at the beginning there's some translation from Czech, but after that it's all in English. Enjoy.
I'm really pleased to invite my Czech colleagues here. We're in Ioannina, and this is the sixth MAGS, the Maritime Archaeological Graduate Symposium. And my colleagues from the Czech Republic have been both presenting an amazing paper on the monoxylion. I'm still not pronouncing
it's
it.
It's all right.
So you tell me, Max, how I pronounce it properly.
Monoxylion.
Thank you, Max. So I'm here with my colleagues, Max, Rodomir and Aleš. And all three of them, as I understand it, were involved with this incredible project that essentially took the concept of the Bracciano Neolithic log boat and did lots of exciting things with it. So we've got two phases to the project, as I understand it. One was Radomir's brilliant concept of actually trying to see what this boat did. So we're going to work through a bit of a translation. Max has very kindly agreed to provide this translation because I don't speak Czech and Radomir's English is, well, it's better than my Czech. and so I'd like to ask, what inspired you, Rodomir, to do this project, to build a replica of this Neolithic log boat?
Přece jenom, Maxi, řekněte.
Co vás inspirovalo k tomu projektu?
My jsme vyrobili už dříve několik dlabaných člunů, s kterými jsme pluli ve vnitrozemí.
Jo. Prior to this project, they experimentally created multiple boats that were just used on lakes and rivers. Inspiration, because Radomir wanted to try really, really hard this experiment at sea. Mm-hmm. And this is what inspired the spark, or what's sparked the interest inside Radomir. Right.
So you've done a number of experiments before, but with river and lake boats. So with the Bracciano, this is my ignorance, I can't remember, I've seen the boat on display, but was there evidence for a masthead or for any sail, or was it just supposed that they could have sailed it?
Along with Boat 1, which became, which is the name of the vessel found in the Lake Bracciano, were found multiple sailing tools. And these Italian colleagues, archaeologists, who discovered these objects, proposed that they were so technologically advanced that they must have been used, or that it could have been used at sea.
Yeah. Well, that makes total sense. I mean, we always undermine, I think, the capabilities of our ancestors. And, you know, even further back than the Neolithic now, we know that the people had that technology, so it makes total sense. And if you've got the archaeological evidence, then that's fantastic. Can you just remind our listeners, mostly, the date of Bracciano? So we're talking about the Neolithic, but we know that the Neolithic is different in different places.
The findings, there are multiple findings of vessels. There are five vessels in total. And
From Bracciano?
From
Lake,
Bracciano.
There are five.
Five.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, my ignorance.
Wow. Ten to je největší.
Only boat one is the main boat and the only boat that really matters here for us.
Yeah.
The time in which the existence of this locality spans is actually 300 years. And it spawns from 5,600 BCE to 5,300 BCE.
Okay, so you've got this amazing log. How did you decide to the process? Because, you know, we have the archaeological evidence, we have the tools. How do you then decide, you know, where do you start? How do you conceive? I know you've done, You've made boats before, but it's translating what the boat builder in the past did to how we think this through in the present.
First step is obviously to transport whole log to the construction site.
Very important is flat bottom.
Yes, and I'll get to it.
That's a good point. Are you boat builders by trade? Both of you?
They both constructed the boat. They had experience from previous constructions of the two previous replicas. And so they already knew how they need to continue step by step. Mm-hmm. So the first step when the lock was ready was to precisely know who, or they needed to flat the floor.
Yes.
I said it correctly. And then they really had to move fast because the lock was drying out.
Oh, wow. Yes, that's
and if the lock dried out, then it would break. So it would crack. So they had to be really fast during the construction. That's and they knew that the flat floor is a really important construction feature in order not to fall it down on one side or the other.
Well, that's right, isn't it? It's getting that shape, both externally and internally. And I think you... So how long did it take you to build it?
The total construction took around 1,000 hours.
Oh, wow. And what about... You also have these, my favourite things... That you left some of the timber. You didn't make the floor of the log completely level. There were these elevated sections. What that I know was in the archaeology. It was in the original. But what do you think that brings to the structural stability of the boat?
They call it ribs.
Yeah.
And these ribs were present in the original finding. So they really constructed it in a one-by-one scale. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a really good idea because it held the boat together. Mm-hmm. It actually strengthened the whole structure of the boat.
The other thing, though, I mean, you knew how thick the base of the hull was, but when you're doing, you know, waxing or adding, it's difficult to know exactly. So how did you measure? How did you know when to stop in terms of getting the right thickness of the hull?
They made some special wooden pincers.
Oh.
He described the process how they could measure the real thickness of the floor.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see the pincer that you described. So the other thing, before we get on to the propulsion and the expedition, is... Because you've got these amazing tools, and I noticed on the poster in particular, you can see you've made a record of the tool marks. What did you learn from using these tools, and how, you know, perhaps some tools were better for certain types of hewing or cutting or
because they had experience from the previous constructions, they knew how to work most effectively. So from the previous constructions, they knew that carving the boat just small pieces wasn't effective enough. So they carved big chunks or big desks. And this was the most effective way how to really carve the lock. They used wooden kilns. I hope that it's the right word.
No, wedges, yeah, absolutely. So that makes it easier to hew into the boat. So you've got this 11-metre long log boat, and you've got the capacity to take how many people?
So there were 10 benches.
Oh, wow, gosh.
And two people fit in one bench. So really? Let's make 20 people.
Wow.
But you also need someone who... steers the steering oar, and it was the 21st person in the boat. So in at one time 21 people fit on the boat.
Yeah. And you've also got the sail. Did you... The evidence for the sail is obviously quite difficult because these sort of organic materials don't... Square sail? Where, how did you... Because we don't even really have images of these things.
First are all the depictions of sails in the Aegean area.
Yes.
Which is logically much younger.
Yes, exactly. Later.
From the Bronze Age. Yeah. But there was also the other aspect, and this was the experimental archaeology. They wanted to see the effects of a sail on a vessel. And that's the main reason, basically. There were multiple suggestions from previous rows that that a sail could really ease the whole process of paddling. So that's the main reason.
So did you change the shape? Did you move it around in the position of the boat? How did you secure it? Or did you lash it?
The mast was 4 meters long.
Oh, right, that's good.
And the whole sail was held only by two ropes that were somehow tied to the end. Also, there it was tied from the top of a mast the sides of the boat. And those two oarsmen who were sitting next to these ropes were only slightly steering the sail in the proper direction.
Okay, right. And it was square? Was it?
Roughly.
Oh, okay. It was rectangular.
Rectangular. Yeah.
No, okay, brilliant. So were you... Because you went on a long voyage, huh? How far did you travel?
500 kilometers.
Oh, wow. So we went from the north of Greece to... I'm making this up now.
From east to west.
Right.
We started in Samos Island.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Yep. I may add some details to it.
Please.
The whole road was designed to feature the island Melos as its Melos as its midpoint.
Yeah.
Melos was important mining site in 7 millennium BCE. Obsidian, which was used to create sharp tools, was found there. And this obsidian was exported both to eastern Peloponnese, to a site called Franchthi, and also to the eastern Anatolia, where it was found in Chukurichi Hoyuk.
Exactly.
So basically, this expedition replicated the possible trading route of this.
That's brilliant. Stone. And what time of year did you do this?
So they set out in on 15th of June 2023.
Okay.
It took them the whole month to finish the journey. And yes, they arrived to Western Peloponnese in the middle of July.
So at that stage, there's a wind called the Melteme, an east... how strong was it? Because that can be... And you were going across it, I guess, weren't you? The wind was coming on one side, I would imagine.
So the predisposition is, that the wind blows from the north.
North, exactly.
And if you travel from east to the west, then logically you don't paddle against waves, but the waves are actually called side waves.
Yeah.
And they don't present any obstacle to you. So that's the reason why it was done.
Absolutely. It's the best position for the boat in relation to the wind. And presumably you were also experimenting with the position of the sail as you were doing it as the... Because the Melteme increases, as I recall, over the course of the day, so it gets stronger towards the afternoon, if I remember correctly.
This is the issue with the Aegean Sea, that it's a very unstable environment, we can call it like that. During the first half of the trip, they set out in morning, because it was easier. However, once they reached Milos, they preferred to paddle more in the afternoon.
Oh, that's interesting. So you were balancing between sailing and paddling and depending, reacting to the conditions. And also the islands as well, as you say, it's treacherous because you never know. An island funnels the wind, it changes.
Yes, the whole planning or route was planned according to the weather forecast. You know how the weather forecasts work. So there's this expectation and then the reality. Yeah. So you need to be able to
react to it
precisely. Yeah.
But then again, that's part of the experiment, isn't it? Because you're facing reality and you have to find solutions to the problems of that reality. So did you pick some obsidian up in Milos?
Vybírali jste nějaký obsidian na Milosu?
No.
Nezbírali.
They weren't able to pick up anything. No, because, you know, it's an archaeological artifact and it's illegal.
But I guess what I was wondering is they experimented with different weights.
This is exactly what they were doing and what Alex was describing, that they had an expert with them who was experienced in this stone tools, and he brought his own obsidian, which he bought in Mexico, and somehow he tried to replicate the route of the obsidian in its environment, let's say.
That's fantastic. So what do you think was the most, I don't know, unusual thing you learned?
For Aleš, it was this human element, this human connection, because he was there from the beginning, from the construction until the end of the journey. So for him, the most important thing is what sort of relationship a person has with the ship. A person who constructs the boat, the vessel, creates some type of connection with the boat, some sort of relationship, and it really turns out to be a very crucial aspect of the journey and of the overall experience.
That's really, really interesting, isn't it? Because if you think how many people build the boats that they use, I mean, in the present and in the past, or even, you know, I do a lot of work ethnographically and quite often they're commissioned, but that's a really interesting observation, that connection. And I think particularly for log boats, and it's not small boat, but, you know, boats that usually one builder is sort of overseeing, that's really, really interesting. So what was the what was the happiest moment? Getting to the Peloponnese, maybe.
Logically, it is the final leg when they are nearing the end, because the year 2023 was difficult, but also successful, because they finally met all the conditions that really tested the vessel, how it should have been tested in the previous in the previous expeditions. So it was this sigh of relief that they managed to travel the journey, and also that the vessel really proved its effectiveness in heavy sea.
Absolutely. And pride, I hope. I would imagine quite a lot of pride, because that's an amazing achievement, isn't it? Particularly if you reached all your objectives.
First of all, the expedition needs to meet its
goals.
Yeah. Right, thank you. Second is even more important goal, that every man must get back safe.
Absolutely.
Sailor must be humble at all times. And there is no fighting with the sea because the sea always wins. So he must respect the sea and he must respect the conditions.
Yeah.
They fortunately met these conditions.
Was there any point when you thought the sea was going to be too strong or that you had, I don't know, I mean, we had one presentation about emotion in seafaring and did you pray to the gods?
So
I'm glad you're laughing.
Each person has different experience, and each person sees different angles. For Radomir, it was the third phase, because suddenly the conditions became really difficult to pass. And a certain amount of water started getting into the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And at one moment, Radomir said that if they get to the island, they won't set out again.
Wow. Well, you know, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you've got the responsibility of your crew as well, which is another thing.
They slept each night
in a nice hotel and a comfy bed.
On a rocky beach.
Oh my God, so you really were putting your crew through it. Wow, so maybe the best point was getting to that nice hotel with a comfy bed at the other end, but yeah. So what do you think you learned most about Neolithic seafaring?
They also tried to ship both livestock and...
oh, really?
Inanimate cargo. Livestock.
Live cattle.
So they didn't take any live animals with them at open sea because obviously the animals would suffer. However, they loaded the animals during initial trials on lake. And it's really proved to be an effective way of transportation.
Yeah.
They mimicked this process at sea by replacing live animals with people who didn't paddle.
Right. Yeah.
And regarding the cargo, the ship or this replica, and that's probably even boat one from Bracciano was is able to carry 500 kilograms.
Oh, really?
Material.
Oh, wow. Gosh. That's impressive, isn't it? With all the crew as well.
With all the crew.
Wow. And so all of this was documented at every stage and it's published as well, isn't it?
The data are still being assessed and evaluated. It was recorded by GPS.
Yeah.
And whatever could have been recorded or what could have been recorded was recorded, and they will see. I already mentioned the experience, but now they can somehow transfer it into, let's say, more mathematical and physical data that they have, and they can see, they can compare these two spheres, let's say, and
That's really interesting. So you've got the sort of empirical data and then the human agency and that emotion. And so you've been doing this for 30 years. Would you do another one?
Já se to 30 let. Budete dělat další expedici?
Next year. Yes, of course. Yes.
Yes,
it's right.
Yeah.
We're going to do logboat, Neolithic, something more modern. Have you got something in mind?
There will be a fifth installment in the saga.
Oh my goodness.
This time in the North Aegean.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're experimenting with different conditions.
Yes. This is exactly what they are going to try.
It's amazing what you've been doing. It really, really is. And I'm sorry this has taken longer, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. And I'm just going to follow. You're going to have to give me some sort of link so that I can watch you live, and it's just brilliant. And for the knowledge that you're generating as well, it's so, so important. So thank you.
Thank you for having us, and also the part of this project is a public presentation. So there is an upcoming movie, both documentary and short feature movie, historical movie.
Oh, brilliant. Well, the best of luck with all of this, because it's just so exciting.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's taken a lot of your time at the end of a long day, but it really is fantastic. So I'm going to watch this space, as they say. Thank you.
Thank you for very beautiful questions.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind.
Thanks, Max, Rodomir and Alice. That was pretty interesting, very exciting and a little bit hairy at times, but so interesting. And I can't believe that you're up for more. That's just amazing. Thank you to my Czech colleagues and thank you to the listeners for tuning in to the Dive and Dig podcast. Hopefully you will tune in again soon. The podcast is brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the development and research of maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean. Thank you. Take care.